countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing you expert commentary and analysis on what your future farm payments will look like.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, with feed and fertiliser costs rising, farmers look for homegrown solutions. Lambing time is winding down. Is there a viable veal industry in Ireland? And I visit an award-winning cheesemaker in Galway.
Text 51551, email countrywide at rte.ie and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first... Children of Scolfadraig in Westport in County Mayo, which must be teeming with people this morning, because many of you, like them, may be up that little bit earlier to take part in one of the dozens of Climate Charlie walks around the country. Now, looking at the climatecharlie.ie website, the walks are taking place in every part of Ireland and at different times throughout the day. For example, good morning to the Kilmacthomas Walking Club, because their website tells us that they are doing the Anna Valley Walk at 10 a.m. Good luck to everybody climbing Canuck na Naive on Aranmore Island off the coast of Donegal at 1 o'clock today. And at 3:45, there's a walk from Fromoy Golf Club in County Cork to Curran Hill. In Ballyhoura, County Limerick, there are different walks in the course of the day, the last one being at 6 this evening from the church in Glenrahan to Slieve Ray. You might need to bring a torch on that one if you're starting at 6. So check out the climbwithcharlie.ie website for more details. And remember, bring suitable footwear and rain gear and warm clothes, water and snacks as well if you're going out and about today. And do tweet us at RT Countrywide, hashtag climbwithcharlie, so we can wish you well. And we do wish our former colleague Charlie Bird and everybody taking part in that event today, Vicky Phelan, of course, very much involved too. We wish you all the very best, and everybody enjoy and mind yourselves. Now, as the war rages in Ukraine and the impact on fuel, fertiliser and feed prices continue here, farmers are looking at many alternatives to stave off the threat of a fodder shortage later in the year. That includes growing new crops for the very first time. Like Jerome O'Connor, who's a young Limerick dairy farmer who has no experience in growing tillage crops, but he's decided to grow 20 acres of barley to make straw and silage. And he's hoping that this will give him some peace of mind, at least for the coming winter. Now, his friend Richie Lowe knows more about tillage, and so he's giving Jerome a handout. Hannah Quinn Mulligan went to Jerome's farm, where he walked the field with her and described his plans.
We're just in a field here, 20 acre field that I'm going to set for spring barley, and we've got heifers grazing it at the moment. And we're just in the distance, you can kind of see the hills there towards Shenagolan, and the other side then off towards Knockfearna. Then we're milking over 100 cows there now this year, so hopefully that'll go well for us.
You've never grown crops here before, it's your first time, but do you have any experience of it?
No, we haven't grown crops here now before, but I do have experience because I work for a friend of mine, and he's grown crops there for the last 20 years. So
essentially, it's very clever what you're doing, because one of the criticisms of the tillage incentive scheme that was announced by Minister McConlogue was that there isn't enough grain storage facilities in the country for all this increase in grain that we're hoping that we're going to grow. But you are going to grow essentially whole crop silage. We talk about combi crop silage as well, which might be barley and peas. You're just focusing on the barley. You're going to sow it as quickly as possible in the next couple of weeks because it's sowing season, and then in late August, September, you're planning on harvesting it and putting it into a big silage pit. Essentially, that's how you're going to store it. You're going to treat it as well to improve the quality of it. But I mean, You've never grown this before, so what are the challenges that you see?
Well, the main challenges would be the weather would be the main challenge, and then after that just the cost of growing it.
Because you're a fairly young farmer and you've brought in another young farmer to help you, Richie Lowe. You're here and your tillage, you do a lot of tillage and you've been doing it over the years. I mean, has your phone been ringing off the hook looking for advice from, say, people like Jerome on growing their own crops?
Yeah, yes indeed. There has been a couple of people obviously concerned over this war and the grain crisis going forward. So people just maybe asking my experience of it and just the challenges around growing your crops and the cost maybe is, you know, is it going to be feasible? But nobody knows that the price of grain or even the getting of grain next year could be difficult. So
what's that going to cost Jerome in kind of seed and work and then the diesel costs?
Look, I suppose it's very hard to pinpoint exactly what's going to cost. All you don't know until you turn over the ground what's
Jerome involved. Do you know yet how much it's going to cost you?
We're going on Chagas projections for this year, like, but they're kind of outdated with the price of fertiliser and things yet, but we'll be, I'd say, 600 plus a hectare, maybe rough figures.
And do you still think that's good value for money?
Well, I don't know about that, but it's a big upfront cost, but hopefully it'll be worth it in the end.
How much has the price of fertiliser gone up?
Last year, we would have given, I suppose,
400 a tonne.
400 a tonne, yeah, where it's in excess of 800 a tonne now.
Yeah.
So it is over double, yeah.
Your heifers are very keen, very fond of you as well. They've come up for a scratch. Richie, coming back to you, I mean, the scheme has come out, this 12 million euro crop scheme that's there, but it's a little bit too late is the criticism against it.
Look, people can't just flick a switch and turn over to tillage, you know, and I know the minister's come out and offered this money just like out of the blue, but when you're set up for dairy farming and new fencing and water troughs in place, it's very hard just to go in with a plough and start ploughing up good pasture. So it won't suit everybody, but anyone that can make use of it, definitely it'll definitely help the grain crisis situation.
People have pointed to technical difficulties at getting seed, I mean, even getting fertiliser. A lot of co-ops suspended the sales of fertiliser. I mean, has that been a problem getting a handle on resources?
Look, it has been difficult. Like, I ordered loads of fertiliser and unfortunately they weren't full loads because he said, look, just everybody's just trying to ration it out.
The English Minister for Agriculture essentially came out, George Eustace, and said that there was enough slurry to replace all of the artificial fertiliser in the UK. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not saying that the Irish Minister of Agriculture has said that, but when people talk about slurry and its ability to replace fertiliser, you know, what do you think of that?
Yeah, look, slurry has a place, definitely. I'm not saying that we can't work without it. It definitely is a help, but I know in the UK they have a lot more access to digestate from these digesters, which would be a lot more powerful than your ordinary slurry. But it has its place, but still you need the artificial fertiliser to get a return. Like, it's going to cost money. You're going to have your fixed cost to grow grain. Like, you need to be getting the yield. You need to get the return back to make it pay. So like that, you have to put it in to get it back out. So that's the main thing. So I suppose maybe going forward, it's not going to get any better in the next, you don't know how long this is going to last, the crisis. So we need to be thinking ahead as well and getting our stocks in place.
Because, yeah, we import 2/3 of all our animal feed, about 5 million tonnes every year. How many tonnes are you hoping that this field is going to yield for Jerome?
So look, 60 tonne, 50 or 60 tonne, and like grain prices, we're not sure what way that'll be. But look, I'm confident that he'll make money out of it. Whatever, at least he'll have the security of having it in place. So, and he'll have the straw down side of things. And look, it's just going to be, expensive year for dairy farmers, definitely. Like,
and like, talking about the expense, I mean, we look at this field here and we talk about the price of agricultural diesel's gone up by 20%, but say in litres, do you know how many litres of diesel might be used on this field?
You could talk about 1,000 litres just to carry out the work alone. That'd be just the fuel aspect, but then machinery cost, like, you've all that to factor in as well, you know. So it's going to be hard to make it pay, but then if the grain prices are going to be expensive, you'd be hoping you'll have some return from it, like, you know.
Yeah. Jerome, 1,000 litres on this one field, about 60 tonnes of barley, is that going to help with your feed costs? Because you were saying that, you know, feed counts for about 1/3 of all your overall costs.
Yes, we'd be hoping that it would have a return on reduction on price for the overall year, but yeah, it's just the security really is probably a lot of it too now in this current climate.
Say for both of you now, because you are actually both involved in dairy farming on your home farms, when people go into the shop and they're picking up their litre of milk, Do you think they realise the cost increases?
Probably not. Like, definitely the costings have significantly increased, as you say, the fuel and the feed, electricity, you know, it all comes into play to make a litre of milk. The costings have gone up. So, you look, they have increased the milk price. It's great to see it going on the right direction, but it's definitely not where it should be at for the high inflation prices.
The cost increases that we're involved in, it's not been showed at the other side of the market.
I mean, what price per litre are you guys going to need to actually make a profit this year?
It's hard to know, as you said, to put a significant costing on producing a litre of milk. It's so volatile, it'll all depend on what way it'll pan out, but definitely milk should be well above 50 cent a litre anyway.
I wonder, are there many farmers thinking along the way of Jerome O'Connor there? And earlier you heard from his friend Richie Lowe, and we look forward to hearing how this venture actually works out for Jerome and if it helps him manage in the coming winter. And the €10 million tillage incentive scheme, which was unveiled on Thursday, the closing date for applications for that is the 16th of May, with all details at agfood.ie. Now, there's a first time for everything, and while in Limerick, Jerome is facing the challenge of being a first-time tillage farmer, in County Longford, writer John Connell is responsible for the very first time for his own ewes as the lambing season starts. It is one thing to watch your father and mother, with all their experience, make decisions about animals. It's another to bear the weight of responsibility yourself for the very first time. In the middle of his own first lambing season, as the owner of a small flock, he took time to record his thoughts and share them with us here on Countrywide.
It is lambing season on our farm, my first as an owner. I have bought 12 sheep, 12 hoggets to be precise, from my parents, and together now these sheep and I are on a journey of life. Already two have lambed, and this week another went into labour. But the hoggett, a good sturdy girl, had ringworm, or a version of it, where her passage did not fully dilate, and try, as we might, she was not for moving. As she is my sheep, it is left to me to decide what to do. I call the local vet and wait. In waiting, all sorts of things enter my mind. I think of my life, of all the roads that have led me home, home to my Walden of the fields, home to be in touch with the Creator Spirit. And I remember, it's Robert Frost's birthday. Frost said once that his poems helped him to make sense of the world. He farmed, and it was the land that gave him the virtue of having something to talk, and I dare say write, about. In that I find a link, for I write about how I live and farm this land. It centres my life. I think of all this as I wait for the vet. I hear the jeep rustle into the yard, and he is here. We go to the sheep pen, and he examines the girl. I had fretted that it would be a section, a tough operation, but the young vet informs me as I hold the sheep that he can take the lamb, that there is hope. We work then. I hold the sheep, he gets ropes and birthing gel, and we set to the task. He is quiet then as he delves and probes, finding the head and feet, making sure he has the right legs. It is a task beyond my skills. In the silence, I think of the picture of St. Francis I have in the sheep shed, the woodblock painting that came all the way from Santa Fe, New Mexico, which I hold as a good luck charm to watch over the stock. So often in farming, God comes into this creation business, and I do not know why. Maybe there can be no life without him. It is a way for me, at least, to live. Finally, then, the young vet grunts, and I push back the ewe's wool to see a head, a pair of legs emerge, and with a good downward pull, the lamb comes out to moving life. "He's a monster, fair bloody play to you," I say. He checks then for a second and pulls another strong lamb from the ewe. We set to clearing mucus and fluid from the lambs, and after we spill some water over their heads, the shock of life comes into them. "I wouldn't have got him," I admit. "I'm glad it's good news," the vet says, and we smile at each other. It is a good smile. As Frost says, we love the things we love for what they are. I'm finding that truism in the sheep shed this lambing season, come what may.
Writer and farmer John Connell in Longford. And later in the programme, we'll be talking more about spring lamb from a food point of view. Yeah, it's spring calving time and Irish calves are in high demand across Europe. In the first 9 weeks of this year, just under 32,000 were exported, 17,000 going to the Netherlands, mostly for veal. Now, this is white veal from animals under 3 months of age. But is there an opportunity in Ireland to rear more calves here as rose or rosé veal, which are from 6 to 12 months old? Well, Suzanne Campbell has been to Kilkenny to find out more.
So this is your veal. It's a good long fillet.
Yeah, that's about a 1.5 kilo fillet.
In the gleaming kitchens of the Mount Juliet Hotel, I'm getting a rare opportunity to root through the fridges with head chef John Kelly. I'm here to learn more about rose or rosé veal. Not the white meat of young calves, but rather that of 6 to 10 month old cattle. Tell us how you got into serving veal.
Well, we got in touch with a local supplier and we came to try it. No one else was using it. It was so good. And veal wasn't that big, that's 10 years ago. But when you tell people it's Irish and organic, well brought up as they say, we have it on the tasting menu here for the last 8 years and people love it.
How do you serve it?
So we just cut off about a 6 ounce piece, seal it in the pan very lightly, both sides, sea salt, tiny bit of garlic, bit of rosemary, butter under the bottom of the grill, cook it really slow, and then we serve it with white asparagus, morels and Van John sauce.
And in terms of veal, would Irish customers have been a little reluctant to eat it because they thought it was very young veal? But this is quite a different product.
This is up under 12 months, but it's homegrown, it's organic. It's well produced, the animal's well looked after, so that's the big thing I think with veal, and that's why veal had such a bad image. But a lot of veal that had the bad image was white veal from the continent, but this is rosé veal. Welfare is the primary thing, so it's good.
Mount Juliet get their organic veal from various Irish farmers who supply to the Good Herdsman meats business. In Clara, closer to Kilkenny City, I visit farmer Tony Byrne, who rears veal for a butcher alongside his dairy calf to beef operation.
They're mostly dairy cross calves. They're anything from Aberdeen Angus to Aberac, and there's some Speckle Park mixed through those penny calves there.
On a bed of deep straw, he has 20 or so month old calves licking each other's ears and coming over to say hello.
I get them from a next door neighbour. The calves just travel half mile down the road. I buy all my calves from the same source. They don't travel any distance.
And in addition to veal, which we'll talk about in a minute, you raise these mainly as dairy to beef.
Dairy to beef, yes. They're all contracted 2020 scheme, Keepac. They're sold at 18, 20 months of age.
And you get them in over the spring calving. And then do you take calves at a different point in the year?
I take just a small few, a different pint of the year. For the veal side of things, he needs them 6 to 10 months of age, so I have to have a supply
the whole time. A continuation of them coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
And what way do you rear them? The same as the others?
They're reared the same as the others, only I'd hand-pick a few and I'd keep them fed meal just for before slaughter. They need to be meal-fed to get a certain fat cover-up on them for 6 weeks before. Otherwise, they're in the field or in the shed or on straw bed for the winter and fields during the summer.
It's a business for you that you do along with your raising of the dairy calves, and you can do them side by side. Is it something that we could possibly see more custom, more consumers going into and more farmers producing them for veal?
Of course, yeah, those kind of calves could be done that way. As far as I'd be concerned, they could be done now with marketing them, or whether demand is there for it, I don't know. It's a niche market and it has to be expensive. I don't know whether to be in this country, I don't know, but it should be. It should be.
A few miles in the road is Braga Valley Meats, a butcher shop in Kilkenny's New Park shopping centre, with butcher George Navratil, originally from the Czech Republic, at the helm. His shop is hung with Spanish-style hams, but in fact they are Irish, cured without nitrates alongside his own charcuterie, game meats, rabbit and the more day-to-day burgers and lovely T-bone steaks.
Ham on ham, we make this, well, Spanish-style Irish meat and home curing, sea salt and herbs.
Looks fantastic. And you sell veal here. The farmer I visited, Tony, he's providing you with veal. Tell us about how it is as a product and how you treat it here.
Well, Tony Byrne, I know him for nearly 20 years. I buy some sheep of him as well, or lambs. The veal, I buy rosé veal, which would be from 6 to 12 months old. It's not real veal, it's a kind of young beef. It's a rosé veal called in Ireland.
You get them slaughtered and then you take them in and do the secondary process. slaughter scene.
That's right, yeah. I let them slaughter in Tynansmead in Johnstown. Then Neil bring the carcasses here and we debone it and make a product.
You sell the scallops, you sell the kind of the steak, more like steak cuts here in the shop, and you also sell to restaurants as well?
We're selling to restaurants mostly the scallop, steak, strip loin, cotlets or mince, veal mince. And we have two very good restaurants in Ripasso in Bray and La Fontana in Waterford.
Is it something that if we could get more consumers over, we could keep more of these calves in Ireland and farm them for veal? But it's a matter of consumer demand. Could you see that growing?
Look, it's definitely better than was when we started 5 years ago. But, like, look, people are afraid veal is a baby. It's not really a baby. It's 10 months old. It's a small cow,
yeah.
You know. So it's, but definitely need a bigger market.
The market in Ireland is still small for veal, but could it grow to keep even a small percentage of our calves at home rather than on the boat to Holland to have value added to them there?
Why not? Why not do it at home and local? The calf here are born local. I rear them and they go just straight in the road and it's the local butcher and that's it.
That's Clara, County Kilkenny farmer Tony Byrne there, and we also heard from Mount Juliet head chef John Kelly and George the Butcher in Kilkenny, who sells online at bregavalleymeats.ie. That's BREAGAGH valleymeats.ie, and all spoke to Suzanne Campbell in Kilkenny this week. Now, just like calving time, it has been lambing time on sheep farms over the past number of weeks all over the country, a busy and important time for sheep farmers. So we're going to talk now all things lamb, and I'm joined by Edward Hayden of the Edward Hayden Cookery School in Greignamana and Seamus McMenamin of Borbia. But first I'm going to talk to Selena McKenzie, who's lambing in Red Cross in County Wicklow. Have you been out to the lambing shed already this morning, Selena? How are things going there?
Damien, I'm as you can hear, I'm in a cluster of triplets now, and while I was waiting for you to come on the phone, the three of them popped out, easy peasy.
Wow. Have you just started lambing there?
So we started lambing, we had the ram in for them to be lambing on the 28th of March, so we're a week in now, and they knew that the fine weather was there, and then they forgot to get the memo about the bad weather, and we're nearly halfway through now, and it's gone very well.
Good.
Because you want it to go very quickly, so if you have any trouble, you can foster lambs on to other yos, because you've got a bulk of...
Yeah. So if you've more than two lambs, obviously you need the third or the fourth become orphans as such, is that right?
Not orphans.
Pets.
But we would, you know, we'd foster on to a single,
yeah.
And say if we had a dead setter or whatever, you'd, you know, put one on. To,
yeah, because the sheep only has two teeth for them to suck on. So you're late lambing, am I right? By
we're
Irish
late
standards,
lambing. We're a bit further up the hill, and we like to let them out on good grass. And wait for spring to be a bit warmer. They don't hang around in the shed very long, and
yeah,
get them out
as soon as you can.
Yeah.
How busy is it, Celia, for non sheep farmers listening to us? You know, is it very hands on?
I was thinking about this question, and all I can say, it's like training for a marathon, and then realizing that you haven't even got fit yet. You forget, you get muscles in places you didn't know you had muscles, with the bending and getting up and down. And,
yeah, but it's a real sign of spring, isn't it? And lovely sounds. And as you said, when you see the lambs maybe hopping out onto the green lush fields there in the next few weeks, it's a sign the winter's behind us, isn't it?
Of course it is. But, you know, there are lads out there who lamb in, you know, December, and, you know, they have a different... that they'd be having a harder time of it than we would.
Yeah.
But it's all about the weather and grass growth for us, and
letting them outside. You don't have to keep them in too long. Stay with me there if you can, Selena. I'll let you feed those trips there while you're at it. Seamus McMenamin is sector manager with Borbia,
yes,
with responsibility for sheep meat, is also on the line. Seamus, good morning to you. I understand that kind of from around the middle of February until around the middle of April, that's peak lambing time, and there's something like, is it 2 million lambs born in the whole country?
Yeah, no, that would be your peak lambing, and yeah, there'd be about just between what there's about just short of 3 million ewes, so there'd probably be a few more lambs than that. So it's a very busy time of the year.
Very busy. Will you just paint a picture of the sheep sector in Ireland? Like, is it growing? Is it slowing, or is it static?
No, the last few years there's sort of been a bit of an increase in the ewe flock, just on the back of the very sort of firm and strong prices we've been seeing. So, like, if you take a look at the last census figures, they've increased by 2% to just short of 2.8 million ewes. So there's sort of been a gradual increase, just with growing interest sort of in the sector, just because of that increased profitability, I suppose.
Yeah, and Selina's there in County Wicklow, but where would the majority of sheep farms be? Would they be in the west, or are they dotted all over the place?
Yeah, I suppose there's two sort of types of sheep farm. I suppose your earlier lambing flocks tends to be on the better ground, and then as you move into the west, then there'd be a lot of more hill breeds then as you move into the west and the north of the country.
Yeah, and what are the prices like at the moment? Are sheep farmers as exposed to all the input cost increases that other sectors are to? Now, I'm appreciating that, you know, there are some dairy farmers that have sheep, there are tillage farmers that have sheep, there are sheep farmers just with nothing else, and beef farmers that have sheep. So there's mixtures all over the place.
Yeah, like most sheep farmers, probably 85% of them have another enterprise on farm. Obviously then some are just dedicated to sheep. But I suppose sheep prices at the minute, like you're talking, like the general run of them is probably in around 7.30 a kilo, probably a bit more going now with good demand sort of in the run up to Easter. But overall, the trade is probably a wee bit behind where it was last year. But if you look back over the last few years, it's still very strong. Now, as you said, and there's sort of increased production costs. Like we've seen the price of cereals and inputs go up, and this is probably the peak sort of time that we use cereals sort of with sheep production. Like most of our sheep, like 80-90% of their diet would be grass, so we'd be able to turn them out to the fields. Obviously then it'll just have an impact, you know, on your cost of production with whatever creep feed that farmers decide to put in, and then fertilizer that they have to use. And I suppose the impact that'll have is just over the year will be when these lambs then will become available for slaughter, you know, if farmers decide then to not go in with the creep feeder and maybe let lambs, you know, stay on that bit longer and get the maximum benefit from grass.
And where do the Finnish lambs go to? Where's it, like beef and dairy, do we export the majority of lamb from this country?
Yeah, about 80% of what we produce is exported. And the large majority of that goes into Europe. There's good demand there for lamb in Europe.
Okay.
Particularly over the last few years.
They wouldn't be going live as such?
No. There was a very small minority of sheep left the country. Like you're talking like about 0.5% of everything we export is going live. So
the lamb we export is actually as carcass?
Yeah. It's going as carcass or cuts. And then their main sort of outlets there would be Europe. So your France, Germany, Belgium, Italy and the Nordics sort of would be the bulk of what we export.
Okay.
And as I said, there's good demand there for Irish lamb, just on the back of tighter global supplies.
Okay, that's good to hear. Now, it's great to have Chef Edward Hayden with us. Hi, Edward, how are you?
Good morning, Damien, how are you?
Now, you're a TV chef, but you're also, of course, a lecturer in Waterford Institute of Technology and the Culinary School there. Are we fond of lamb in this country?
Yeah, I think increasingly so. I mean, I think at one stage we weren't because Seamus was talking there about methods of production. And I think at one stage, you know, people kind of thought of lamb and they thought of it as like old aged mutton and the kind of the smell dominated the house. But I think now, you know, the quality of the product is really superior. So, yeah, I think the popularity of lamb is very much increasing in all Irish homes.
And is that including in younger households?
Well, I think the challenge with younger households is, first of all, a lot of the cuts of lamb, Damien, are kind of prime cuts. So this often can be that little bit more expensive. And then the cheaper cuts, or what we might call the off cuts, take a little bit more skill and a little bit more time. And you find that increasingly people are more time poor and perhaps they've got a deficit of culinary skills. So they don't necessarily have the wherewithal of what we would traditionally have recognised as, you know, the stay-at-home homemakers who had the day to be kind of, you know, perhaps going out and doing their chores around the house, and also kind of watching, you know, a nice slow cooked lamb stew simmer on the stove. Now I think people are coming in the evening. They've got a very tight and small window in which to prepare, cook, serve the dinner, and still do their chores, having completed their day's work also.
And lamb is traditionally associated with Easter. Have you any idea why that is, Edward?
Well, listen, as Jim has said, and your first guest, the farmer, Selena, of course, it's bang on in season as well. It's the turkey of Easter, really, isn't it? And it's at its best in or around this time. And I suppose we've got that whole notion of celebration and all of the big occasions. I always think a lot of these occasions have like a biblical origin. So we have that sense of shared food and that sense of kind of having a special food occasion. So lamb, because it's so in season, it's so tasty around this time, it has become, as I said, the turkey of Easter. And a lot of households perhaps maybe just gravitate towards the lamb or the leg of lamb once a year for this season.
Right, okay. And Seamus, again, on that, is it younger or older farmers that tend to stick with sheep farming? Because it is, as Selena was saying there, it's a very laborious business.
Yeah, no, it is, and I suppose we see the average age of farmers increasing. You know, and there has been obviously some farmers as they've aged have moved out of sheep production, and it's just about attracting younger farmers into the business. Now the stronger prices in the last few years have encouraged some producers into the business, and if you go to any of the Chagas farm walks and things, you know, there's plenty of young farmers there with an interest in sheep farming.
Okay. And Selena, we're going to let you back out to the lambing shed there. Busy day ahead for you.
A busy day for me. They don't recognise the weekend and we're in the shed. But it's great. I love the fact that they're the lobster of the land.
Lobster
so
of the land.
Everybody should enjoy them.
Okay. All right. Well, Selena, we're going to leave it there. Selena McKenzie is in Red Cross in County Wicklow. Seamus McMenamin, Sector Manager with Borbia, responsibility for sheep meat. Thank you very much for giving us an overview on that there as well. And Edward Hayden, we're going to let you go because I know you have your own radio show there in KCLR to present this morning. So thanks for taking time out to chat to us on the programme today.
Thanks, Jamie, and good morning.
300 metres, turn left.
I'm on my way west.
Continue for 3 kilometres.
To a farm at the foothills of the Slievahy Mountains, just outside the small village of Abbey, County Galway.
Damien, how are you?
Great, Teresa. I'm just here in the yard, I think.
From now, the beginning of April, until October, Teresa Roach will be busy making cheese on the farm, which has been in her family for over 100 years.
Pleasure to have you here. How are you, found us okay?
A qualified nurse, Teresa worked in the US, New Zealand and Australia. And in 2016, on a visit home, watching her parents working hard milking cows, she came up with the idea of doing more than just sending all the milk to the creamery.
From being abroad, I saw these gaps in the market, which I thought would be a great adventure for us here. And I suppose we've been producing milk for a long time, and sometimes you need to reinvent yourself. And I thought there was an opportunity to be able to tell our story, but also tell the story of the Slievochtys and the community of Abbey, and to showcase what we do proudly.
Teresa went to the Swiss Alps, where she was inspired to make an Alpine-style cheese back home in Abbey.
And a Swiss family, Gutensberger's family, took me on board, and they have been kind of the advocates for helping me out, getting going. So we still stay in touch, and we still work together, and we are just at the phone call away from each other.
And did you know anything about cheese making before, you know, you came home here from nursing?
No, not a bit. I ate it, but I didn't know anything. We wouldn't have been a cheese family, like, even to be honest, they had gotten out of sheep when I came home, and that's where our cheese manufacturing facility is now, is in our sheep shed. So we are using all of what we have around us back again in a different platform.
The Roaches supply Arabon, but of course some of the daily milk is diverted directly to make Kylemore Farmhouse cheese.
Do you feel that there's a taste of Abbey in your cheese, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. That's why we're more proud of it than anything. Your environment around you influences your flavour. So that comes from the soil. You know, we're in a deep, fertile ground area of limestone land, and it's dry. This deep vein is very popular for dairy farming. We have a pedigree Holstein Friesian herd here, and we don't buy any stock in. It's a closed herd, and I suppose that generation of mother and daughters have been here since the mid-1960s.
It's milking time on the farm, and in true Mehel fashion, neighbouring farmer Michael Flynn is on hand to help out.
Michael, how are you?
How are you?
Are you busy?
Birds get busy all this time of the year anyway, when the cows calve, and that keeps them busy.
Right, and is the calving finished here now?
Yeah, it's near enough to now, but there will be some of the suckers around here will be calving in April, to be into April before that had them come.
Right, and the cows are all out. There's parts of the country now where cattle are not out yet. There must be good land around here.
Well, there's good land around here, and there's early grass as well, and yeah, well managed land around here.
Right, okay. So you're getting to do the milking now, are you?
No, I'm just giving him a hand now, just to help him out here. This time he's busy, he helps me when I need help.
All right, so you're farming yourself as well, Michael, are you?
I am, yeah. Took for cows, yeah.
All right, so you help each other?
You help each other, yeah. You haven't an neighbour, you have no one.
Well, Bertie.
Teresa's dad, Bertie, has been milking cows here for over 60 years.
Now, we do about 7,700 kilos of milk on the average for around 100 cows. And we rent a fair bit of land. We only own 27 hectares here with the house, and we rent a couple of other small farms within 2 or 3 miles away.
So the milk that's going to come out of the cows here this evening, you sell some of that to Teresa to make her cheese?
Oh yeah, we pump across to Teresa to make her cheese, and we sell the rest to Arabon, the collect. I've been in milk here since 1962. My parents started with 6 cows, and we've never been without cows since.
In the former sheep shed, there's a small COVID-inspired farm shop and the cheese-making plant.
We're going to enter now into our cheese manufacturing, so we're going to get you to put your gown and apron and...
The milk from the farm is piped through, and the detailed and patient process of making cheese begins.
This is... our first production of 2022, so the cows are at grass, and we wanted to kind of be able to showcase our cheese, but this is our first day of cheese manufacturing. We produce in the months of April to October. This morning we milked the cows at, you know, early morning milk, so it's fresh blood temperature milk that's pumped directly from the milking parlour straight across here into our cheese manufacturing. Here we have a clean line and a filtered line where we filter the milk as it's processed and put into the cheese vat. And then we pasteurised, and from pasteurisation now we've added our cultures, our ferments, and then our preservatives and our rennet, which has been included. That's all set, and just as you arrived there, we cut the curd. So the process here now is separating the whey from the curds. What we're waiting now is to heat it up, and we heat it up to optimum temperature, and then we'll be moulding it off. So we have our cheese press here. Right here now we have the curds are reducing. It's at optimum speed on the cutting stage, and you can see they went from large curds down to really small curds. So they're diamond size. So we want them as small as possible and as diamond, so that the cheese will dry, the curds will dry.
After a 3-day preparation and preservation process, the 5-kilo wheels of hard cheese are moved to the nearby maturing room, where they'll stay from anywhere between 12 months and 3 years before being sold.
So all the cheeses are washed and turned regularly. Each week we're hoovering cheese, we're brushing, hand brushing the cheeses and turning them, rotating them. So that's how the cheese is matured and aged over time. And what we do then is we bring it out here to the cutting room. We're just going to cut it. It's about 5 kilos. It's a hard rind, as we said. When you cut it through... We will cut it then and vacuum pack it and label it and weigh it and box it off here. And then it's distributed from here using courier, or we do some drops ourselves within the county.
So now we're here in this beautiful little quaint little farm shop.
We set up this 2 years ago to the date, really, and it was April 2 years ago, and we set it up due to loss of 80% of our customers overnight.
80%?
We supply directly to restaurants and hotels, and when the pandemic hit, and slowly we realised we're a small producer, we depended on hotel and restaurants.
And you had a room full of wheels in there.
We had a room full of wheels and no home for them, and we still have to continue to make cheese. I had to try and re-establish and be innovative, so I set up the tiny farm shop with two tables originally on the table, and we started selling cheese and some cakes and brown bread. We started working with local artisan and producers who make seasonal high-quality produce, and then we got a great response and great support from the local community and the county and nationally then, and internationally it's grown. It generated a new income, and we sold that 5 tons of cheese directly to the customers ourselves on site.
Wow.
Teresa is celebrating winning the prestigious Food Award at the recent Food Writers Guild Annual Awards for her Coolfin cheese, one of three varieties she currently makes. Entering only the fourth year of business, Teresa now has plans to continue investing in the farm shop, a farm tour business, while also expanding the cheesemaking operation.
The last 4 years have been a bit of a blur, exciting blur really. Every day it's new, and you have to own it and love it to keep doing it, and it's good.
Well, congratulations so far, Teresa, and the very best of luck for this season and for the years ahead.
Thank you, Damien, for visiting us.
And that was Teresa Roach of KylemoreFarmhouseCheese.com on the family farm in Galway, making cheese for the first time in 2022 this week. That's all we have time for this week. Eileen Heron produced. Brian Mass was broadcast coordinator, and Dave Gibson was on sound. Coming up after the 9 News, it's playback here in Radio 1. We'll talk to you at the same time next week. Bye-bye and thanks for listening.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Pick up this week's paper to find out what the future of your farm payments will look like.